Good morning. I'd like to call the Beta February 25th board meeting order. And if I could get Quinn to do the roll call for our members, please.
Okay. Mr. Wilkin?
Here.
Acting Commissioner Paraday?
Here.
Ms. Nygaard?
Here.
Mr. Hughes?
Here.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Here.
Mr. Dick?
Here.
Mr. Booth?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thanks, Karen. Now would you continue with the staff and public, please?
As I point to you in this room, please state your name and what organization you're with, and we will start with you back there, sir.
Alan Bailey, Petroleum News.
Leona Hakala, Ada.
J. Page, First National Bank, Alaska.
James McConnell, McConnell & Associates.
Nick Shinoyak, Ada.
Back there.
Sally Morris, Benacapec.
Karsten Rodvik, Ada.
Bob Shepchick, the Interior Energy Project.
Chris Anderson,
Ada.
That corner here.
Mark Davis, Ada.
Colin Kramer, Alaska Journal of
Commerce.
Jeff Van Lawrence, Ada.
Gene Cario, AEA.
Tim Gallagher, HDR.
Matt Harris, Ada.
Jim Hemsath, Ada.
Jared Hugh Day, Department of Law.
Mark Harrison,
Frank Kempinen, Ada.
Michael Lamb, Ada.
Let's go. Do we got public on the phone?
Yes.
Yes, you have John Farrell with the Anchorage Airport.
All the public.
Kelly Helmbrecht with Brenna Bell and Clarkson.
Any other public?
Thank you. Before our agenda, I request one modification to the agenda. I'd like to move the executive session to item right before adjournment.
Chairman, I'll move the agenda with that modification.
One second.
Any discussion? No, we'll move the agenda as modified. Thank you. Item number five is public comments. I will start with people on the phone. Please state your name, affiliation, if any, and limit your 3 minutes. So, anybody online wish to testify or list a comment?
Yes, this is John Parrott at the Anchorage Airport.
Welcome, John.
Well, good morning, everyone. I just I won't take very much time, but I wanted to say that it has been very pleasant working with Ada, specifically Jim Hemsath and Lori on the FedEx lease renewal. It's a little bit complicated. Ada is the airport's tenant. FedEx is Ada's tenant, and clearly working through that process to continue to anchor an airport customer that provides hundreds of jobs to Anchorage and millions of dollars to the airport, and is really one of those anchor tenants that that makes the other tenants show up is very important. And I believe this was the first renewal of the lease, and it has gone very well. And the fact that while the FedEx is not the airport's direct tenant for the hangar, Ada kept the airport informed in the loop, and we very much look forward to finalizing that lease renewal.
Thank you, John. So I guess that's that would be under new business item number seven, item B. We'll get to that. Is there anybody else? Any questions of John first? All right, anybody else wish to testify? Anybody else online? And then online, I will go inside the conference room here. Is anybody in the conference room wishing to speak? All right, this time I'll close public comments. Next up is our prior minutes. We have December 16th, January 14th, and February 5th.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move all 3 sets of minutes.
Second. Second. Thank you. Discussion? Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to direct our attention to page number 7 on 10 on December 16th. First paragraph, line number 7. It states that Mr. Wilkin noted for the record he received a confidential answer that it cost operators on the slope $2 of ECF to handle. If I said that was incorrect, that's not the source of information. The source of information was my memory when we were doing a GIA in 2006. That's the source. It wasn't a confidential answer at all. So if that could just be noted that site of $2 of BCF is a result of my memory in regard to a GIA legislation in 2006.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Gary. Anybody else have any comments?
Oh, sorry, one other one. Page 10, I think it would be under 8 director's comments. I think it would be beneficial to those who are reading that line 2 under director's comments. MOC1 is Mustang Oil something.
Mustang Operations Center.
Yeah, so maybe just stick that in there so one might know what
the press box is.
Yeah, there's just something. Okay.
Any other comments on the minutes? Any objections to adopting the minutes? And we adopt them. Next up is new business. We have item number 8, loan resolution, L15-02. Robert Larson with the local press in 2000. We'd like to knock Michael Lamb to the board meeting. Michael, I will pass it to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, I'm asked Chris Anderson, who's the Commercial Finance Director, to give a staff report, and if need be, as you heard earlier, Mr. J.P. from First National Bank of Alaska is here.
Thank you. Good morning. Yes, this is a request from First National for a loan participation, and this is a loan participation. Gross loan amount of $3,885,000, and so we are being asked to participate in an amount of $3,496,500. We would be giving a 25-year loan participation, and FNBA would be at a variable rate for 12 and a half years. The loan would be to Robert and Emil Larson, as well as their trust, which is Robert C. Larson, we're both in the trust of 2000. It is to refinance an existing office building, multi-tenanted office building, 341 West Shooter. And there will be approximately 16 jobs created as a result of the connection, as well as 100% of these jobs being filled by Alaska residents. The property will be managed by Kurt Mating. He is with Realty Executives of Alaska, who's been in the state both as a realtor and property manager for many years. Does a very good job. We would be taking a first lien position on this property. And the property was appraised by Blacksmith and Richards with an as-is value of $6,936,000 and an at-stabilized value of $7,001,000. The difference being that it was not completely leased at the time. It would give us a 56% loan value, which is well within our guidelines. The debt service coverage by appraisal is 1.81:1, and by the rent roll, by actual rent, 1.42:1. Both of which are acceptable. Ada is requiring an assignment of leases, and the leases are to be subordinate to the deed of trust. Payoff would include 30 days interest plus associated fees and costs. We do have related debt or vicinity. We've actually been financing them on and off for the last 10 years. And they have currently 3 related loans with us, the balance of which cumulatively is $4,829,000. All loans are paid as agreed. The proceeds would refinance an existing loan and provide funds to pay off a construction loan for another property on Abbott. Total ADA exposure then would be $6,873,213. Financial information, basic financial information is given to you in the credit presentation, sent out separately. There's no known environmental issues with this property. The strengths that we've outlined on the credit presentation are low loan value, 56%. Again, the debt service coverage on actual 1421 by appraisal 1811. And they have an excellent credit for repayment history. They also have very good clerks. We always put, lately anyway, as a weakness or a potential weakness, a potential downturn in the market because of the oil prices, but that would be a much wider impact on the specific request, certainly. It's much too early to really make that determination. I think the real estate, commercial real estate market is really sort of stable right now in the Anchorage area. In regards to portfolio diversification, these would be year-end December numbers. ADA has 19.84% of the total statewide portfolio in the office industry. And with this request, that would increase to 20.62. And within the Anchorage region, we are at 29.26, and that would increase to 30.64%. The primary focus in our portfolio diversification is retail, tourism, and office. Those are the ones that have the highest percentages. In regards to its capacity, fiscal year end 15, we had a funding allocation of $16.83 million, and you can tell we deducted out what was funded. In rounded figures, 15.9 approved to be funded but hasn't closed. 18 with this request, you would then take out, again, rounded 3.5, and we still have an excess of $22 million available. So there is funding capacity. And with that, the staff recommends loan for approval. Do you have any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Fred?
Mr. Chairman, my first question is just the nature of the six jobs. I just wanted to understand how those resulted from the loan and what are they.
That job certification probably came into FNBA. I believe it's related to these tenants,
right?
Yeah. The borrower.
Yes.
And there's about 15 tenants in the building, so I don't know if you know exactly.
I think of the 15 tenants, there was one vacancy, and the size of the unit would likely result in approximately six employees.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Follow up? Different question. So it's tied to refinancing a different property, which says that the borrowers were unable to close because the project did not meet sufficient debt coverage ratio requirements, and that it's a three-unit, two-story building in which the bottom units leased up quickly, but the second unit did not. So I'm just curious how we're involved in the refinance of an existing construction loan. I'm really looking for a 30,000-foot view answer of how that fits our mission.
Actually, that's a loan that's on our books right now.
that construction loan was made after an ADA commitment was issued on that property. You might be familiar with Susana Abbott. It's next to the Independence Park Shopping Center on that side, and then fast food restaurant on the other. So we had a commitment. Of course, the commitment required that the property be 100% leased up, and so he paid a length of 1% extension fee every month for 2+ years, I think.
Yeah.
And waiting for that top tenant to come along. And it got to the point where he had so much equity in that 10 or 12 year old ADA loan at 341 Tudor, it made sense, I think, for everybody to basically vacate that original amendment we had on that subject property and incorporate that debt into the existing line.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And for the record, could you state your name and affiliation, please?
Jay Page, First National Bank, Alaska.
Thank you, Jay. Questions from the board? Chris, I have one question. It's just related to your to the weakness portion.
Mm-hmm.
So do we have a or could the board get on a quarterly basis a, you guys do a kind of a survey of the economy around the state, different areas, obviously with the downturn, the oil prices, whatnot. I think it would be good that the board step up to speed on what the commercial activity and the business is doing throughout various, you know, four or five regions in the state. Do you, with your staff, do you do that? Do you use existing periodicals that people write?
We have access to market information that comes to us from both Eastern and marketing and agents. But I don't know of a focal point in Anchorage that takes all of the different, you know, types of commercial real estate and monitoring.
Not necessarily Anchorage, I'm talking statewide. Southeastern, you know, interior, South Central, obviously.
I think one of the challenges in doing something like that, not just for us, but for anyone, is, you know, real estate agents in the past have tried to do that before in various sectors, but they don't get paid for it. So it's not very lucrative for them to obtain this information, except if they're working on a particular project. Then they will research the market. Let me back up for a minute. You know, when we went through a period of time when there were a lot of hotel requests, we got a little nervous about the degree of hotels that we had in our tourism segment. And we did commission an appraiser who specialized in hotels to do market research for us. We did that twice. Pretty expensive, but it gave us the information that we needed in order to go forward. I don't know if I'm particularly answering your question, because we have market information that comes to us on office buildings, on retail, on warehouse, and most of it's in Anchorage. I don't have anything to do with it.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Are you kind of on a broader question? Mm-hmm. At least I wrote it down right. Kind of on a quarterly basis survey of the economy of the state as a whole. So we'll just take that as a question, if you will. I know that there are different reports that come out.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what you're looking, just try to find some and see if any of those meet what you have in mind. Would that work for you?
Well, something I would like to, you know, from the board's perspective, just a kind of an overview of the economy, what's going on in the state, and really an identifier if something comes up. Issue, you know, that we should, you know, kind of keep track of, because, you know, the general statement of potential downturn in the economy, well, okay, where do you decide if there is one? If there is one, we're fortunate it appears to be stable, but what basis are you using for that? And then is there something out there that we can look at, some type of indicators that you use that we as a board can be informed on a quarterly basis, just for better information. And I don't know if there is something. If we have, I don't want to bend the wheel here, but at some point, I think it's, you know.
Yeah, I don't know that. I'm going to repeat. I don't think that there is collectively, but I think there can be something that is more focused to an individual request. You know, like if they're bringing in a request on an office building, I mean, we can tell you what the general vacancies are for Class A and Class B and Class C office buildings in Anchorage.
Or the region's trending. I mean, I guess maybe that would be a better one. How a region's trending, you know,
yeah.
That's it.
The state has quite a few economists actually that do this.
Perfect.
So it's just a matter of getting hold of some of those. And then there's always going to be a particular question that maybe it's not addressed in the broader perspective, but we'll make a note and find some options that are available to the board. And
you know, the name that pops into my head is Neil Fried.
Yeah.
I guess everybody's putting their head up there.
Yeah.
Well, they do a publication called Trends.
Right, he does, yeah.
Just came out last week.
Right. Yeah, he does a good job.
So.
I think, you know, it's you know, we're a diverse area, and what affects the interior region is going to be completely different than the southeast region. And so what I don't want to do is prejudice something happening in one region that's not quite up to speed versus another, but yet information from the board that they can kind of get a snapshot of the quarter and how we're doing.
Okay.
So the good for me to give the executive director some work when he gets back.
Have you all rested up?
Yeah.
And can.
Okay, so I'll take a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move resolution number L15-02.
Okay, the motion is before us. Are there any questions? Brandon, could you pull the motion?
Mr. Wilkins?
Aye.
Acting Mr. Carey?
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard?
Yes.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Mr. Day?
Yes.
Mr. Bruce?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Next item up is resolution G15-05, approval of Federal Express Maintenance Annual Lease. I think what I'd like to do on this is get the resolution in favor.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Michael?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, we invite Mr. Hemseth up, who's the Project Development Director, and just my short synopsis, which he's going to call us deaf in, and you heard a little bit from Mr. Parrott on the phone that essentially lease with extension with the airport, potentially lease with FedEx, and then refurbishment work. And Mr. Hemseth to give the staff report.
Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to you all. I've given you all a plot sheet, it's kind of a summary of where we're going with summarizing the relatively summarized board memo on the new lease. It's not a lease extension with FedEx. The lease expires at the end of March, and a new lease is required with FedEx that would take place beginning April 15th. So resolution G1505 authorizes gave the authority to both execute a new lease with FedEx for a term of 8 years followed by with a 10-year extension, and to execute early the extension of the ground lease at the airport, which had normally been extended in 2017, but we've asked to extend that in 2015 so that the entire term of the FedEx lease, the first term of the FedEx lease is underneath that ground lease extension. They want to make sure that there was space for them and that their building would not have to be moved off of the existing ground. The project itself is a fair market value lease of the facility. The history of this project is AIN has owned the project since its inception in 1992 when they designed and built both the hangar, and during that time also added a hangar and fire suppression system for a total cost of something in excess of just around $32 million. It was a 20-year term for the lease. The board memo and the quad sheet indicated $55.8 million fees in. That was to the end of 2013. The end of January of this year, total revenues were $59.4. Term of the lease should be just under $62 million when the lease expires. That would be principal and interest that were recovered from the original 20-year term. Because the building now is owned by AIDA and is paid off, our approach taken is one of evaluating fair market value for the facility. We engaged Richter and Stone Real Estate Appraisers to do a detailed evaluation of like properties, as well as the condition of the hangar itself, and through a number of different methods, square foot, approximate value, sales cost of that, we evaluated the facility at $22.2 million, and it's recommended that the fair market value of the lease be $138,142 per month, or $1.66 million per year for an 8-year term. As part of that lease, it will need to refurbish some of the major systems in the building, including the boiler, the heaters, the hangar door, and upgrades to the fire suppression system, totaling by estimate $3.2 million. In the agreement with FedEx, we have put in a not to exceed $4 million as part of this. So even we'll spend $4 million as part of refurbishing to allow us to lease the building at $1.66 million a year for the next 8 years. There is a 10-year extension at the end of that 8 years. And let me clarify, the 8-year extension is one that was, the 8-year lease is what was requested by FedEx. What they like to do is they're trying to bring all their leases in line at the airports. They all expire in 2023. So they're consistent. Right now, they have leases that expire at a variety of different dates. They want to get everything on a basis. In a like manner, we're doing just exactly the same thing. The fire suppression system and the hangar lease are in two different time frames as well. And we're combining them into one agreement so we have one aligned lease. You've heard John when he mentioned about the value of FedEx to be as an anchor tenant at the airport for the private industry. That is a significant operation. Basically, Ted Stevens Airport ranks number 5 in the world in tonnage for cargo landings, and this is due to no small part of the anchor of FedEx being there in the business that it did. Additionally, FedEx pays a little bit in excess of $4 million a year in landing fees and something in the order of $800,000 a year to the airport in ground leases. They're responsible for all the ground leases. They also buy $1.5 million worth of fuel a year as well. There's a fair amount of business that comes into this project from FedEx as an operation. 3,000 cargo landings a year in FY13, which is the last full year record that we have. Total in Anchorage is something in the order of 500 employees. The majority of that not being in the hangar. The hangar itself is 40 maintenance workers and 15 to 18 supervisors, depending on what the workload is. But the distribution system and the other things that sort of fall around that facility being at equal 500 jobs in Alaska. FedEx, this is a triple net lease. FedEx is responsible for making payments to the airport for its lease fees and any other costs, taxes associated with operating on that property are also borne by FedEx. It's also important to note that we put down a number of risks, as well as risks. It's actually a pretty difficult thing to find some true risks with the facility in FedEx. We see no reason that the cargo business is going to fall off. While there are more fuel-efficient planes, what that really means, we've seen the new 747-8 that are landing, is they're carrying considerably more load as opposed to fuel. They're still landing at Ted Stevens to fuel up and move on because it lives in greater penetration into the lower 48. We don't see that changing. In fact, we're now starting to see 777s land, which were originally bought by FedEx to be extended range, but they're starting to load up more too as well. So they're carrying cargo versus fuel by landing here. So we're in a very strategic place as that relates to global cargo coming in over the pole and into Asia. Right now, over the last year and a half, by fuel usage at the airport, it's been fairly stable. The city is not seeing what had occurred in the early 2000s, where you'd see a big load of fuel and landings, really based on the Christmas rush. The last 3 years, it's been almost stable with that regard. And one of the key concerns of any of the operators has been access to fuel and cost of fuel as well. And the airport consortium, which FedEx is one, have also constructed new tankage at the airport to be able to bring in larger loads of fuel on the global market for jet fuel. So they've stabilized their own fuel costs as well. So the operational aspects of this facility, this business, are very, very, very small. And the only other thing that are out there as risks are it is a 20-year-old building. We're doing what we know now to be major upgrades or refurbishments, really, in the door and the heating system. Something else can happen over the next 8 years. FedEx has asked us, and we've agreed to, that ADA would be responsible for those repairs, but those repairs would be amortized over the life of that repair at 6.5% interest and added to the lease costs. So we won't be doing anything in addition to the $4 million as part of our lease cost. If any operations or improvements to the facility are required in excess of $4 million or down the road, once the initial refurbishment is done, those costs will be added to the lease. So we protect ourselves against additional costs we might have to bear going forward. And then just the last thing I'd just like to point out again is that the facility is appraised at notion of $20 million. We own the facility. If there was an event where FedEx was to leave after 8 years and There wasn't an ability for any other carriers to take on. We'd expect, because of location of Ted Stevens and the global economy, that some consortium would come up and we'd have the ability to sell it.
What's the size of the facility?
I want to say 176,000 square feet, but Chair, in all honesty, that's just a number that's stuck in my head that it has no value. It takes a couple minutes to back to you on the appraisal on that. I'm sorry, it was way off. 78,938 square feet. And $1.75 per square foot is the appraised value of lease space, which gives us 138,142 or the 165,7698 on an annual basis in terms of rent.
So 78,000 square feet?
78,938.
And the appraisal is based on not only based on just the improvements to the land, is that correct?
The appraisals are based on, as best I could, because there's not a hangar of this size in Alaska, but based on a cost approach, what they believe would cost to replace this facility, which is the 22.2, what they see other properties, other aircraft hangars and park selling for, and that's $28.7 million sales value, and income capitalization, looking at some of the other rents that are being charged in the area of $20 million. So the big factor in there is that you can look at the other rents, and they might get to the $20 million, but that door is the big thing. It's not only an expensive item, it's something that you need to be able to handle the size of the aircraft in there. That's why the appraisers are recommending $1.75 a square foot and the $22.2 million valuation of the property.
Well, as you know, I have a lot of experience in building hangars at the airport.
I do. So I can tell you how much yours were appraised for.
Yeah.
Your name's been up a couple of times.
$282 a foot, I can tell you that.
I'm sorry?
I said they weren't appraised at $282 a square foot.
As a rental? Or is it you're talking about cost?
Cost.
Yeah.
That's about a third higher than whatever he's building out there.
And that's primarily due to the door and the size. The fact is, it's a fairly unique facility. So the appraiser just kind of brought that price up. We weren't arguing, and neither did FedEx. And the reason FedEx is not arguing is actually a significant reduction in what they've been paying to date, which has been around $238,000 a month. So they did ask for it. It for free, and we suggest that that's not the right answer.
Well, my personal experience, I would suggest that not only the door, but the land, you know, what the airport has left is very expensive to develop because of the heat and what they have. And so it's proportionally, per square foot development cost instead of raw land is very expensive now because of what's left.
Well, our capital costs are in excess of $30 million, I think. One of the big cost items was, in fact, foundation because of the site that was in. I've also attached, as an excerpt from the project development plan, a SWOT analysis that we have done on the FedEx analysis to sort of put things in perspective. That's what we've done in all our assets. And I believe after Christmas, Ted had mailed out those development reports. So anybody didn't get a copy, we've got copies here for you. I know Crystal and Dan, you have gotten copies, and I believe a copy of them as well. So we have extras. But staff recommend to proceed based on the appraisal value. It's also important that we have, in fact, dotted our I's and crossed our T's. We did a public notice in 2013 advising everyone that we were going to be negotiating with FedEx for release. We received no comments. We also went to the municipalities acquired by Stacey to get their concurrence, which they did.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions for board members?
Mr. Chairman.
Right.
Mr. Chairman, I'm curious about the synchronization of lease timing. So we're accepting a shorter-term lease at a substantially reduced cost from the current lease, which I see the background information that supports that. But in synchronizing that lease, we're yielding to FedEx leverage for their future decision-making because they'll have all of their properties aligned. And I'm curious as to what value we're receiving in return for that yielding of that leverage.
In our evaluation, there was a couple of things that we were thinking about that. As one, we did understand that by aligning all their leases, there was a place they could all leave at one time and not leave pieces parts there. We had a lot of discussion with the airport about that because those other leases are leases that they're getting as well. The airport was comfortable with that, knowing that the business is still the business and the location is still good. But more importantly, when we received the appraised value, we did not consider any negotiations related to lowering the price of the fair market value based on the last 20 years they had. This is what it was. We took the high value of it. There was no discount over time. And in fact, what we've put in this to our advantage, if they do extend the lease under 10 years, is we have a price adjustment at that point based on fair market at that time and the economy as well.
Mr. Chairman, and I'm supportive conceptually of where we are, but I want to probe that reasoning because we did accept the lower cost lease. The existing lease you just quoted is $240,000. So that is the fair market value. That's the price being paid. So I'm just curious as to, that's a reduction of, I don't have my calculator up.
It's close to 100.
So just describe your thought. I understood the valuation approach, but I think that's a data point that's germane to the decision making.
The current amount that FedEx has been paying was in fact not, a couple ways to look at that. First, it wasn't based on fair market value. It was FedEx paid for the cost of the project plus 7.5% interest. Even during capital leases going forward on all our projects, actually, based on the actual cost and the percentage rate and the project component is basing on what we get as an owner on that. We are now moving from having our capital costs paid for during the aspect still owning the facility, but moving ahead with fair market value. So it's not appropriate to compare what had been paid for the past 20 years versus what we're paid for. FedEx's perspective, by the way, which is not just limited to FedEx, but other people at facilities that we own, I said, well, since we've paid for it, then we should be getting it for nothing now.
Yeah, that's a non-starter.
And that's a non-starter. So where we are as a state entity is fair market value.
Mr. Chairman, follow-up. The other question I had concerned the lease extension and the synchronization between the lease term that ADA is signing with FedEx versus the lease term ADA is signing with TSAIA, because the TSIA lease term extends from two, so they're not synchronized. The land lease and the building lease are not synchronized.
That's correct.
So what's your view of those risks?
The risks are minimal for a couple of reasons. One is that we
think
it's a very small probability that there won't be a tenant in there post-2023. After that, we will, and after the next, we're working on land leases that are in fact out of sync. And our lease with Ted Stevens is 20-year lease plus 2 10s, I believe, of which we're executing the first 10 stays to 2027, the second 10 taking it to 2037.
Mm-hmm.
I might be able to retire by then, but I'm still not entirely sure those dates could be choosing to. But they are out of sync. But working with the airport, I know we are with that, we feel it will be easy to accommodate that and minimize the risk going forward.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one more follow-up. If we're working to synchronize FedEx's various leases to their corporate needs, I'm just questioning syncing it to our actual underlying land lease, because that gap could at some point cause a problem.
I understand that. And it is a risk that's in place, but one that the Department of Transportation was unwilling to modify at this time.
May I comment on that a little bit?
Sure.
So, having the
lot of hangers out there. At the end of the day, you want as long a term lease as you can, regardless of who you're renting to. That's your investment in your asset base. Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, there's actually a formula on lease renewals that the amount of dollars you reinvest in your facility, on your next lease extension, the longer term you get. I think I sat on a commission 15 years ago where we actually got that in statute, that for every dollar you spend, it equivalent to so many years extension on the lease. But at the end of the day, you can actually go out 55 years on your lease. And at the end of the day, the state, the way it works right now is that as long as you're a tenant and you're standing with DOT, the airport, they will automatically give you 5-year extensions. If I'm correct. Am I correct on that, Jeff?
Right, but we're actually a 10-year extension.
Yeah, so it sounds like you got, from the 5, you got the 10-year extensions. So you never actually, the state, DOT, aviation can never come in and take your improvements as long as you're a good tenant, which would, you know, soak you. And the reason why you do that, Fred, is because, let's say I have a tenant in my hangar, and the tenant now wants to buy the hangar, but the lease is only good up for 10 years, and he wants to get a 20-year loan from ADA. Well, typically, I would think Chris would want 1.5 times the lease rate, the term for the loan, so she'd want a 30-year lease. So how do you facilitate that? And the way the state does it is they said, well, if you put these dollars back in, you make improvements, external, internal, ramp, whatever, we can give you 30 years, which satisfies the lending institution. The buyer then has something long term, and that's kind of the. So I've never seen any leases match up with what I call third party leases, with lease with the state on the land.
Originally, the where the state was matched with, they operated a 40-year lease,
yeah,
about 20 years to 10 extensions.
Mr. Chairman, then to your commentary, in terms of making $4 million of refurbishment, that should have led to a longer-term lease if we're going the other direction.
Yes. If I was leasing it, I would ask for the full value, which I don't have the formula in front of you, whatever that is.
In terms of duration.
Duration.
We're talking about the ground lease, right?
Yes.
Yeah. With 7 out of 10 on top of that, so we're a ways out.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to option. I would just, they could actually tack it on, mm-hmm, up to a term of 50 years, I believe.
That would be, we'll investigate that. That's,
yeah,
good information.
Mr. Chairman, my last question just concerns the extensions solely exercised by FedEx without a reopener. And it seems to me like, given that you've accepted a shorter term lease to begin with, I understand that they've already funded the capital cost of the project, and so it's logical that at this renewal point the rate would reflect fair market value, but there's not a reopener provision to that.
There's a reopener only in the sense that the extension, the lease amount will be reevaluated at the extension.
I didn't read that in the lease, Mr. Chairman.
In 8 years.
8 years, yes.
Can you walk me to that, please?
Section 2D.
Thank you. Thank you. That's the question. Thank you.
Well, remind us about the property taxes. There are none. We don't pay them, the state doesn't pay them, the city doesn't charge property tax. We went on the records to verify that what we heard is true, and there are no taxes charged to us. If there were, by the agreement, if for some reason the city changed their mind, FedEx is responsible for paying them.
So why is the city not charging the tax?
I believe they've got themselves wrapped around on state authorities, that state land. It's state property, and the owner of the facility is a state entity that's not liable for taxes. This is something that sort of blossomed up as we were saying, I wonder what the tax amount is. And we've gone back and said there have been property taxes assessed to this.
Well, originally, when this facility was built, any state or railroad land, whether you're a private, a tenant or private state or private entity, didn't get taxed on the land. since that time, if you're a private entity and you're leasing it from a state entity, you get taxed.
And on the building or the land or both?
On the
improvement.
No, on both.
On both.
On both.
Now, what we don't know, and we haven't had a chance to discuss this with the tax recorder, is that the city may have given a tax holiday to FedEx to bring the facility here. That was in terms of the lease. This actually may change. We all may be surprised. But right now, there hasn't been a tax that's been assessed. But the lease is written very much specifically the triple net, that they are responsible for all taxes going forward. So there is a change in that.
When we originally put together, the city exempted or gave a tax holiday as an incentive. We were competing with Portland to get FedEx to come here, and that was one of the incentives that was hung in front of it.
Yeah, I would really look at that, because if it's expired, it doesn't happen. I can tell you right now, there'll be a lot of telephone calls going from private industry about this precedent.
I was basically aware of that incident and get back to with a note with you, but again, from an ADA perspective, going forward, our lease, FedEx has agreed and with the reason to go forward paying all property taxes as appropriate. So it's not a concern, but it is a curiosity, and we will investigate that. Kind of we came up in the last couple of months, as we were finding from the last details, we couldn't find that there is any tax base. So again, looking at the ADA files, it wasn't clear going back 23 years ago, really, when we started, where that was. Our assumption was that there was a tax holiday that the city had put in.
Did the municipality have to do anything as far as supporting this lease renewal, or was there a resolution by the assembly?
No, there wasn't a resolution, but we had sent them a letter per statute as to which the city manager replied back that the city has no problem. That was all required from our perspective. Was there? We had advised them, and they had come back with no questions or concern.
And then, Jim, just from a 20,000-foot level. Are there any other facilities that ADA owns that's leased out to private industry that are taxes being paid to the local municipality?
Yes. The Skagway Ore Terminal. Capstone pays property tax based on the improvement of the facility to Skagway.
Mm-hmm. How about in Ketchikan?
Ketchikan, there is a tax holiday. 30-year tax holiday on the facility.
Okay. And it's specific to that piece of property in Ketchikan?
Yes.
Okay. Any further questions for the board? Terry?
So Fred and Dana, I appreciate your hands-on experience. Do the issues you brought forward today rise to the level that we should table this for additional review and bring it back to the next meeting, and I'll probably you folks' advice.
Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your kindness to my thinking, but I think that answer is no. The fair market value question is the substantive answer to the concern I had about the drop in the income from the previous 20-year term to the current term, and I'm satisfied.
Thank you.
All right. No more questions? All right. I guess we'll pop to the vote. Frank?
Mr. Wilson?
Aye.
Mr. Paraday?
Aye.
Ms. Nygaard?
Yes.
Mr. Hughes?
Yes.
Deputy Commissioner Burnett?
Yes.
Mr. Day?
Yes.
Mr. Cruz?
Yes.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Board. Thank you. Thank you, Jim. All right, next up, Mike, we have the Interior Energy Project update.
Yeah. We have, been there more than 35 miles from home. We have two experts here to give the updates. Mr. Shepchuk from the banks, and I think Mr. Barber is here to talk about the due diligence process. And talking about yesterday, a little overhead, that you can answer any question you have.
So, welcome, Mark and Bob. Thank you.
Good morning. Since I saw you last, I'm now the lead of the Interior Agency Project Team. You saw that fine memo. And for a quick overview, the team really is the entirety of the core team is in this room. It's myself, well, except for Ted, who's in Hawaii, who thought this was a retirement trip to Hawaii and it turned into a vacation. Ted has agreed to stay on to lead the rebuilding force. One, because it's in a real house, and two, we didn't really want to transition in the middle of due diligence. Kirk is doing the engineering technical lead. Nick is doing the financial and is the IET representative to Acting Commissioner Faraday's guest supply team. Gene is leading the legislative work. He's also a member of the community conversion team, and he's very good at a mic, so he has community presentations on a regular basis as well. And then Carson is handling our outreach and communications. That's the core of the team, and it's a lot who have worked on it before. The main difference I would tell you is that with the approval of the chair and the executive director, that team is now fully focused on this project. That doesn't mean that there aren't others working on it. You know, the Mark and Mark team are supporting due diligence. HDR and MEI are still there for technical support. The ADA and AEA staff, whether they are directly helping on the project or picking up workload that the others would have done, are all pitching in. And so the level of support we received from both the ADA and AEA sides, as well as VCCD, DNR, and DOR, and the governor's office are leave us with any resource we feel is necessary and have not been pushed back on anything. So it's our job now to bring you guys forward a project, and we are solely focused on that project. From the 10,000-foot description level, the concession agreement project really had a low-cost long-term gas supply and a supply chain as designed that was really too expensive to bring it all the way to close. That reset in January that terminated the concession agreement led to the ability to explore options, and we will be doing that. The main one that you've seen about is South Central approach. And from that same 10,000-foot level, you almost have the inverse of that North Slope concession agreement option. You have a supply chain that unquestionably can deliver at a lower cost for liquefaction, for transportation, for operations cost, with a gas supply that's a bigger challenge in terms of both cost, volatility, and duration. And so we've been tasked to put together a supply chain that matches the community and the IEP goals, and consider both north, south, and if gas comes in a Zeppelin, we will look at gas in a Zeppelin. But we will keep the focus on the entirety of the supply chain and on the delivered costs. For that basis, I've broken down the tasks and the team efforts based on the components of that supply chain. As on whether you've done them on the whiteboard or on your notes, the supply cost, liquefaction, transportation, storage and regas, and distribution. And each component of that will be worked both independently and as part of a complete cost model, so that the discussion that really never got had on what's the most effective use of the capital stack and the tools that ADA has been given in, and is financing more appropriate in the liquefaction and higher cost in trucking or distribution, or is it better placed in distribution, will be something that we'll be able to model with you. There are some cross-component tasks, the legislative tasks, that full supply chain cost modeling, and alternative approaches. And I can tell you, you may have seen some of the press coverage. I'm fully committed to Senator Vachicki that independent of everything else we're doing, we will spend the time and energy necessary to answer the questions about will rolled steel pipe from Matsu to Fairbanks provide an effective or cost-effective option? And Kirk and I met with NSTAR last week on that. I'll do some more work on that. And then I intend to sit down with Senator Michicki, and because he's knowledgeable, he's supportive, he wants it to work, and believes that his solution will, and we'll hunt that one down. And so that will be independent of the other work that we're doing. I won't, being the last presenter before lunch, I'll be respectful of time, so I'll let you ask questions more than go through, but in general, the task responsibilities and desired end results, ultimately I'm responsible for the team's failure or success on all the components. Each area has a team lead. Acting Commissioner Paraday has already pulled together a team from DNR, DOR, and IEP, that's Nick, Governor's Office, Alaska Railroad, to work the supply component. On the liquefaction, Kirk will lead up that effort, and it will include a solicitation of proposers, as you might have suspected with the reset from the concession agreement. Everybody who has an idea on how to solve the problems of the Ontario has run forward with their PowerPoint through the proposal, and usually they start in the governor's office and then end up back down here. And so we intend to put together solicitations and winnow those down to two or three that real time and money will be spent on, based on, you know, how far along are they? Do they have real quotes from manufacturers? Do they have land, or do they have a concept? And that will, that will occur in the next month. Not the end result, but the process will get going.
And Bob, that's both directions, just to clarify, that's both South Central and North Slope gas?
I expect it will focus on LNG. In fact, we met from 8 to 10 this morning in advance of your meeting. I expect it will focus on LNG, and then we'll consider what you would call non-confirming alternatives if somebody else wants to put in a, and that could be North Slope or South. If somebody wants to put in a rolled steel pipeline or some other supply chain, we will take that in and evaluate it at the same time, but it will focus on LNG capacity feeding in the interior.
Either direction.
Okay. On the transportation, both Kirk and Nick will be working that one. With the rail coming in recently, you might have seen a lot of rail, not in addition to the analysis that you've seen, because the MWH work on trucking, and I believe HDR and Chris did work on trucking as well. The turning that from the south really is just miles and a little more ease of transportation, but comparing that both with size of trailers and with the ability to use rail, we'll make it there'll be a little additional work that's required. The viability of rail has to do with the amount you need to haul, where you're hauling it from, and the ability to grow across time rather than have a fully subscribed system. So we will work with Mr. Williams, who's doing the numbers on the rail side, and you know, have a comparison to that. Storage and regas. This really will, Kirk will lead this, but he'll be working with the Interior Utilities as an optimized utility storage plan, as we're looking at the due diligence and acquisition of Pentex. The high cost of storage really is one of the places that you could look to see efficiencies in a single utility approach for storage, which would include Golden Valley. The storage is also more cost effective the larger you build it, and so at some point the question is how much do you need and how do you phase it balanced against the larger you build early, the lower cost per unit, and that a lot of good work was done by one of the modelers from MWH in that area already, and we would build off it for that work. Distribution, really I'll lead that effort, one because all the time I've spent on it already. Two, because the chairman made sure it was quite top on my list in terms of the combined the impact of a combined utility and potential savings both in operational and capital. Kirk will do the portion that looks at the piping and are there efficiencies that can be gained from from connectivity and pressures and sizing of pipe. Ted will be doing the due diligence, and at, when I finish up, Mark is here with Ted and Hawaii to talk about that because we thought you might have a lot of questions in that area. And really the goal is whether it's jointly owned, a singly operated utility with a postage stamp rate that takes advantage of both operational and capital efficiencies. And that probably certainly is the main driver behind the Pentex acquisition and the ability to combine those shared costs. Conversions. Gene is already on the conversions team. Ada is going to play a huge role in steering that, but in terms of success of the overall project, we need to keep a finger on the pulse of, is there financing available for people who are willing to convert? The general theme forward on that has been an on-bill program that people can convert, finance their furnace and conversion, and it's collected across time, so they see savings from their fuel. Some of those savings pay for their furnace, and that we're looking at private banks to be providing that financing. And that's the lowest cost private money that I've been able to find that fits into the overall project without adding large cost to the meter. And then finally, those cross components, the legislative issues of House Bill 105 and Senate Bill 50, that unless you want it drilled into, I won't go into today. There is PACE legislation, which is an energy efficiency legislation that is before the legislature that deals with that commercial side of conversions that really there isn't a piece in our residential conversion program so far. And Sarah and Emily are providing support on that. And really that community understanding support, Gene and I will work that hard. To know that the community understands that you're not getting calls as board members. We don't know what's happening in the community and nobody's telling us. That's one of the things that we'll do. And with that, I'd switch to due diligence and then we'll take questions.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Board, I'm Mark Reagan with Western Financial Group. We are in the process of several things going in parallel to work from a letter of intent, which is an agreement to agree, to having an actual acquisition for Pentex. And we're negotiating to detailed agreements. That process is underway, and we expect to conclude that probably next week. At the same time, we're doing very detailed due diligence on everything that we would acquire if we completed the Pentex acquisition. We've set up, Pentex set up a virtual data room where all of the relevant documents are stored as we do the due diligence, which looks at legal and environmental and financial and all the other features of acquiring that business. And our team, and I won't go over the team again, there's a lot of the same members that Bob talked about, are appropriate to their expertise going through the information in the data room, and in some cases actually will involve a physical inspection of properties, and we'll bring in HDR and MEI for some of that. Kirk is leading the technical side of that, and some things that are challenging to get into a data room where you scan documents, we'll be looking at and others will be looking at in person in Fairbanks. Alongside that effort, we have engaged an evaluation consultant to give us an expert third-party view of the price and sign off on whether the price is in a reasonable range given market comparables and the capacity of that utility to generate revenues. And all of that is intended to come together in time for us to put together a financing plan. This is being done as a development finance project under that statute for ADA, which does require that we come to the board with a financing plan that demonstrates that given a reasonable set of assumptions and with this set of risks, that the project will finance. So the plan is that that would come, the financial plan with the due diligence materials, the evaluation report, and the definitive agreements to the board at the April meeting. And that, of course, assumes that the due diligence is successful and that we reach final agreement on the detailed documents. But that's the rough outline of the process, and it's well underway and going smoothly.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Bob. So, we'll line up the question. So, questions from the board? Crystal.
So, I wanted to thank you for going to Juneau and presenting in front of the legislature this opportunity that the state has. What has been some of the feedback from them since that time? And have we followed up with the information to them, as well as being very transparent with the marketplace? Because the last thing we want to do is impact the private sector, who are our partners.
The first part of your question, you're welcome. That was, it's been a long time since I had 11 individual meetings and a two-hour LB&E hearing the same day. So some of my brevity in the LB&A had to do with the fact that it was at the end of the day. The questions I heard, because I went in, mostly I did handshake, and I didn't take an agenda, and I didn't take a handout, so I said, what do you want to hear, and what are your concerns? And some had to do with just the political fallout from, there was dissatisfaction with how it was rolled out and how they were informed. And I assured them that would change in terms of our tenor and our approach, and we couldn't undo anything they felt already, but that you know, so everyone that I met with then got a follow-up email with my cell phone number and my email and said, you know, this is for you to use. I heard back from about half of them. The initial high level of frustration that was heard has kind of died down. They're the substantial questions I'm still hearing that we address both orally and, you know, Senator Terry addresses when he's down there is, how does the acquisition fit into the overall IEP and the discussion of the Pentex acquisition and distribution utility and savings that will accrue. There's some confusion that there's an ADA involvement that interferes with private efforts to bring gas and the harvest Pentex sale that was in place. We just continually tell them those really are independent, that it's a membership acquisition being looked at of an LLC, and the contractual requirements that go with that will be dealt with as part of the due diligence and the acquisition. That no one can say right now how the sale between F&E and Hilcorp will work out, but that's not the driver behind the purchase. So most of them are answerable. There is some question about gas supply, and not can you get a contract and what will it be. It's the more visceral. We've had brownout advertisements as recently as 3 years ago in South Central, and should Fairbanks put a straw into the same cup we're drinking out of, sort of deal that members are hearing from their constituents. And so it's mostly the Anchorage, South Central legislature. To that end, really, we're working with DNR and talking about the reserves available and the possibilities, and we're looking at current gas buys that are going on. But that is probably the biggest disquiet that doesn't have a direct answer yet. To address the second part of your question, it has to do with what are private entities doing and how do they fit in. The goal of this is not, as you were told at your previous briefing, for ADA to own and operate utilities. It's to facilitate the interior energy project. The solicitation process that we look to go to will be looking for private partners to do liquefaction transportation, possibly even full supply chain, and the goal is to use the ADA tools to finance the infrastructure portion so the capital costs of that are lower and you have a say in that it's cost-based pricing, not the lowest next alternative to diesel pricing. And so there's no scenario that I've seen or been pitched that involves state-operated liquefaction plants and supply chains. It's the financing underneath it, so the infrastructure is publicly owned, as there are in lots of cases that bring that price down. And that we've got some work to do so that people are not distrustful that there's some less. There's not a nefarious purpose behind what's being done, and really is to look at the financing and the public investment that the legislature operated going into the infrastructure and ensuring that savings flows through to the end meter, and that's the goal, and that's not always believed or trusted, and so we've got some work to do in that area.
A couple of questions. Mark, wasn't there a tripwire date at the end of February for the MOU that had to be crossed in regard to due diligence? February 28th or something like that?
There was a goal on there to have the due diligence and the definitive agreements completed by February 28th.
Okay. And so that's...
It doesn't...
It's tripwire. It was just moving out into March.
Okay. So 2 days.
Yeah,
we'll be there next
week. Oh, okay. So that goal will be reached? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Thank you. So when folks have talked to me about this, I've used the analogy, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems to get traction. I mean, the World Wide Web has given us the Kickstarter programs. I mean, I've spent $25 to kickstart a potato salad recipe, which will arrive at my door in June. So, and people are funding rockets on Kickstarter, so people know about it. It's a phenomenon. So I said to folks, ADA is in a Kickstarter role. We're doing something to move something ahead to a level where it can be supportive on its own. Is that it? That is where we are, is it not? And if I'm wrong, just correct me, but that's clearly to me what we're doing. Am I close?
I'd say that's part of what ADA is doing. The underlying challenge to this project is the low demand in the early years. And that's the Kickstarter role ADA is playing, is to help that demand build so that it will then pay back the IP financing is primarily loan. And so that goal. The other is, the discussion of private enterprise bringing low-cost energy to the interior misses the point that it's been 30 or 40 years that's been waiting to happen. And so something needs to change in the underlying infrastructure, and whether it's partnership or ownership or contractually arranged so that the pricing is more cost or utility-based than it is competitive market, most alternative. And so ADA, through financing of infrastructure, is playing a role to help on the pricing pressure as well as the Kickstarter role. But I would agree that taking the position to help demand build from 1D to 1.5 to 2.25 to 3 is that Kickstarter position that you're taking.
Last question of the two. So, Bob, you're going to spend some time, and the staff's going to spend some time in Juneau. The way I count, 7 committees of referral and 2 floor sessions. So that's 9. You checked off 1 yesterday. Now you're at 8. So is there anything that ADA needs to do? Have you got a place to hang your head? Hang your hat. Use your head, hang your hat. Are you productive? There's anything we can do? Do you have a place that you can operate out of?
Well, when I'm down, the governor's office has provided me a little cubby to sit in. Most of the legislative committee work Gene will be doing. I intend to go down in a more informal, let's lunch and learn, let's talk about where the project is, and to provide information out of the lights, camera, action, what did you know, where did you know it, you know, hearing sort of environment. And plus that fits my style better. So I would expect to be down every 2 or 3 weeks to do lunch and learn, sort of, here's the project, here's how it's progressing, do you have questions? And they can send their aides, they can come themselves. The only exception to that probably is I fully intend to go down, either myself or myself and Nick, and spend time with Senator Machicki and his staff on Westfield.
So you guys, I mean, you've got a place to operate out of, you're productive. Okay, thank you, Dr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I actually have a more complete answer to Mr. Wilson's question.
Right.
We will either have it next week or not, because we do have to reach agreement on the final business terms to complete those final agreements, and sometimes that doesn't happen. You're expected to, but there's a possibility that it won't. Thanks.
Chair, I have a question. So I think the general public always has some point of reference of what aid has done in the past. And we're kind of pioneering what we're doing in the future. And when you look at the Ketchikan shipyards, for example, we own an asset, we have an operator. You look at Red Dog, the same scenario. How is this opportunity different, or is it not different?
Well, my in-depth knowledge of other AIA assets makes it hard for me to answer that, because everyone even know more about that than I do. I see them as similar in that ADA will at least initially take an ownership interest in a ongoing business that has cash flows and look to get a return out of that, and then to the extent there's growth or other opportunity, that's the economic development that you guys look to make occur. And I kind of defer to Michael on comparison.
I think to some extent, and perhaps even to Mr. Wilson's question a little bit, is that AIDA really is sort of fulfilling its mission and being, in terms of IEP in specific right now, being a vehicle for the state to step in to help try to solve a problem that Mr. Shepchak has talked about that hasn't been solved for 30-some years. The dynamics haven't worked. And I would add to not only the energy issue, as Mr. Wilkin knows, but my long time at the borough before I left was the threat of the PM 2.5 and the sanctions and the economic consequences of that, the stability of the economy there, let alone potential shrinkage on the basis, both from energy costs, having been through two downsizing events up there. And so from the global perspective of AIDA's role for economic development, job creation, and I would even add stability is a component of that, it clearly is consistent. And in this instance, just like with the Ketchikan shipyard, the federal dollars stuff being part of it, and AIDA was used as a vehicle to get that done and to still own it, here you're talking about state dollars coming through AIDA, not revolving fund dollars, but AIDA being and having the tools to actually put a deal together like this. And so I think globally, when you step back, it clearly is the mission that every one of the projects we have are slightly different, but this clearly legally is within our boundaries. And quite frankly, I think I'm acting right now. We're duty-bound to do what we can do for the interior, both in energy, both dealing with federal stuff and to help with the stabilization economy.
And the other parallel is that AIDA will not operate the gas utility. We've got a structure in place now that's operating it. And they contemplate it as a strategic investment to have that asset there and to make it easier to work together with IGBU there to create the kind of consolidated utility that Bob was talking about. But parallel to the other assets you talked about, it's an acquisition, but will not be operated there.
I'm glad you said that, Mark. I'm glad you said that on the record.
Are you good?
I'm good.
Questions? I'd like to thank both Bob and Mark, and appreciate the update, and we look forward to continued update and feedback. If there's anything the board members we can do to facilitate your efforts, please don't hesitate to ask and let us know. And we look forward to some positive results in the future. So again, anything we can do, as Greg mentioned, from the board level to help, just don't hesitate to ask.
Thank you.
I'd also like to point out that I just mentioned Mr. Perry here in his efforts and from the administration side. I will not relate to like herding cats, but it's pretty close what he's up to. And so, from my perspective,
that's being kind to cats.
I appreciate that.
I had two other things that weren't pertaining to these folks, although they may be able to help. So, could I ask those questions?
You bet.
At our last meeting, we spoke of a piece of paper that two or three pages, and it was sort of a postmortem on the NWH effort, and I took exception to that piece of paper. And so it shows up in our minutes on page 89, first paragraph of January 14th, and it says, Mr. Leonard agreed with Chair Prues and noted a complete analysis of the IEP project is being compiled. So I would just like to lay a marker on the table, Michael, just to let Ted know that I flagged that. And whenever that happens, I look forward to that. And may or may not have comments, but clearly that piece that was given us in mid-January, piece from one person's perspective, was lacking in lots of things. So I just want to flag that. The other thing is, if I could, I don't want to be insensitive, but all of us were supplied a letter from the Alliance a couple of days ago. So I want to talk a little bit about that. We all know who the Alliance is. The Alliance is built on what builds Alaska, and I appreciate that understanding. So, but I don't remember the Alliance being at any of our meetings over the last 15 months. Our friends at MWH, the staff here has busted their rears and work 7 days a week to bring us something that we can talk about and discuss. I don't remember them being here, and I would ask anybody in the room if the Alliance has spoken to any of you, trying to get knowledge upon which they could write a letter as they did. So that distresses me, and I just, I've seen this before, unfortunately, when an organization, as things move along, an organization with very little involvement gets a hand put up their back and suddenly sits on someone's knee and somebody starts pulling the strings. That bothers me, and so I would ask the board, or I'd ask the Alliance, that if they really do want to learn where we are today and all the work that's been put into this, on behalf of the state, behalf of people in Interior Alaska, that they call any one of us and say, why don't we sit down and try to understand this before they write letters that tell us that we're doing the wrong thing. So that's an open invitation on the record, certainly to call me, and I would hope all of us would be willing to fill in the Alliance leadership or the Alliance membership as to this effort where we're trying to go to help our friends in Fairbanks.
Mr. Chairman?
With that, thank you.
Just following up on those thoughts, perhaps Mr. Shevchik should be a speaker at a RDC upcoming event of some sort.
Be high on my date list.
Yes, sir. Hey, might as well deal with it head on.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Greg. Any other comments before we go?
I think I appreciate your comments, Mr. Wilkinson. I know it's probably one of many letters we're going to get from organizations that represent who build Alaska. But I think it stems from the accountability they want the state to have, to be very transparent of what we're doing before they hear from a reporter or they hear from a friend or they hear from somebody. We have to be in front of that train. We have to be out there telling them that we're not being dishonest, we're not trying to go around the marketplace. And, you know, when you wait 3 weeks to get a piece of information out there that they can chew on, maybe we do need to be a little bit more involved with the market. We need to be more involved with those alliances and say, hey, we need you guys to bring us solutions. So, in part, I can see why that letter came to us, because we didn't get in front of that train fast enough. And that causes the market to speculate the trusting relationship we're trying to build. So thank you for bringing that to the table. And thank the Alliance for writing that letter that brought them in the conversation today. They're very critical to the next step.
Any questions? Okay. Appreciate your update. So we've got the executive session going to the bottom. So Michael, next is the draft comments.
Not too many. The standard stuff, the loans dashboard stuff's in the back. The matrix is in the back. And I know that there was a question that put forward to me from the board relating to the Callan's report. And actually, sorry, I just actually got to look at it this morning, but they have a, I think it's, you would pass this around to so I take any questions you have, but I think this is a nice synopsis of parts of the report. So we do look at it, and we actually did talk to Callan about it. And at any particular point in time, any quarter ending, we may or may not be moving the market. So this is a good explanation, but it's also a great overview that per hour investment resolution, that's GO114D, that talks about internal, externally managed, and in particular section, I think it's 1G, talks about performance standards, and over a rolling 3 to 5 year period, investment manager expects to achieve total returns, net of fees, which at a minimum matched out of the market benchmark and rank at or above the median of their peer group. And one of the comments in here that you'll see is that actually over a 5 year period, APCM has exceeded on average every year by 20 basis points the benchmark. And then down at the very bottom, there's a note down here too that essentially ADA's mandates and direction for the resolution are actually more conservative than what the benchmark is, which covers the U.S. government index and credit, mortgage-backed securities, et cetera, et cetera. So I actually do appreciate the question. And last year was really pretty good, 5-point-some percent rate of return on the external managed between both of them. And the quarter's down, but all in all, they clearly meet the criteria. And we actually do look at these and don't talk about it much. And so after you get a chance to browse through that and look at the Callan report, I'd be happy to take any questions. And I know there was a conversation in the past about whether or not you wanted to have them come before the board and give a report on externally managed funds. And so what I would ask, take a look at the report. They're great reports of the quarterly. And I think this is a great two-page summation, quite frankly. That hopefully should bring you some comfort. And with that, I would see if you had any specific questions that I might try to answer.
Did you write this, Michael?
No, actually, it turned out to be, I'm working with actually Kelly Beach. And so I gave it to her. I said, okay, here's the deal. And I had already actually gone through the report, but it's like, well, this is good. You need to get an answer to this question and then follow up actually with Callan with work, right, and make sure that what we say is truthful and accurate, but make at a high level. And so, no, my staff did. I think it's, like I said, I just got to read it this morning finally, and I thought, dang, I think I'll make copies of this so the board can have it.
The came from us.
Yes. Yeah, staff originated that, and we outside third party verified it. And especially the question, you know, if you ever look at the number of when you look at the literally the pages and pages of investment, when you talk about hundreds of millions of dollars, it's a lot. And what's going on in any particular time in the market, you know, this, and they mentioned in here that they have more corporates than treasuries, and treasuries outperformed, and so that was all. But do you have any questions, actually, before I just stop talking?
Well, first of all, I appreciate you doing that. I think it's a good exercise for the board to understand. We take a snapshot and then ask, you know, where are we at in relationship to our goals? Where are we at to other funds of similar nature, other investments? And so it may spur future questions, it may not. But one, I appreciate the response, and I appreciate, you know, that we, some of us that are not financial backed, it's educated, that, you know, like you do every day, can ask us how to get these questions answered. That being said, it's important that we understand the dollars we have and what they're doing while they're not out being utilized in the last economy, and the relationship between the two. That's really important. So when we are making decisions based on investment strategies or assets or loans, it's good that we know what it's doing right now versus what it's going to do in the economy, the marketplace, the differences, plus, you know, the risk and whatnot, and you know, what it's going to provide to the economy. So that's why I wanted to kind of bring this up, so we get an understanding where it is right now, what it does, and then so we understand where we want it to go. And with that follow-up, Mike, I was going to ask you, from a perspective and overall 20,000-foot level, from the balances that we have in our funds, do you see, you know, I anticipate probably some more pressure from outside sources with opportunity. And so are we, is there a mechanism that we use on the board, that can get to the board, from your perspective, to say, you know, here's how much we have to leave, period, no ifs, ands, or buts, don't even think about it, in our revolving funds. Here's what we have to go and try to spur the economy and get a return on it. And I know that's going to change based on what bonds we have out there and whatnot, but I think we need to, as a board, we need to start to understand that, because I do anticipate some opportunities in the, you know, next 24 months. And so I'll let the finance people talk about if that's a legitimate request and concern that we should keep our eye on.
It is a big issue in front of me right now. A few months ago, there was the question of, it seems like he has a lot of cash as a result of course, the sale of Healy, and then a lot of prepayment loans, and even the jack-up rig, and it's like, man, how to protect this or explain that there's going to be a need for it, to the fact now that I actually, if a lot of the projects, and Mr. Hemseth group is working on it, that you throw Pentex in, you throw Blue Crest in, you throw Fury in, you throw Mach 1 in there, there's REI. There's more cash for those projects than I have actual liquidity. And I'm actually in, Commissioner Cardi approved it. Ted and I, when Ted gets back, he's going back to Seattle to meet actually with Goldman and Citi and Western Financial to go, okay, phrase them how you will, the opportunities in front of us, how do we go to the market? What story do you want to tell? Do we want to tie it to a particular project? Do we want to lump projects together? Do we do it tied to loans? The length of the leases, even the lease today, 8 year versus like a Red Dog that's longer. And Sue, I'm constantly like churning around in my head. It's like, well, what is the best way for us to maintain our liquidity, not have too much liquidity, but be viewed properly in the market so that we do, when we go to the market to borrow, that we're getting a good rate. And so part of the meeting actually is to talk about all of those, because it's not a simple dynamic. And I know at some point, I think later this summer, or is to come back to the strategic plan, and I know that we've done some follow-up to what is the additional bond capacity, but there really does get to be this question, how much external cash you need to have in order to show stability to the marketplace, right? In case you invest in something and the payments don't come in as you planned, and life happens. And so I like to have more cash, but that's just my nature. But when you're getting returns of this amount, it ought to give the people that we go and say we can repay you some comfort. Mm-hmm. So I really do expect to come back, but in having the conversations I had a couple of weeks ago, it raised a lot more questions in my head in talking to the underwriters about what story do we want to go tell the market, because no matter which path you go down, you're going to have different questions to answer. And do you want to get into project-specific dynamics when, in right now, statutory, we only statutory box that we're in is $10 million per a project for bonding. And a lot of these projects now are $30 and $50 million at a pop. That's a lot of cash. I mean, those are pretty big checks. So it is a big deal for me. It's a big concern. And I think, quite frankly, and actually, I think item 3 of the strategic plan under the umbrella that I'm responsible for is the question of the portfolio allocation and what that should be. I mean, if you go back to the three-legged stool, I mean, there is a question, how much should be external, how much for loans, how much for projects? And even within the projects, should you limit how much that you would have any particular on? So it is a dynamic question, and what's happened just in the last few months totally moved the needle for me of how do I justify the amount of cash we have to, I don't actually have enough cash.
Thank you, Michael. Any questions from the board on that? I just think it's important that we have the conversation more about the speed and the opportunities that come to us that we have a 20,000-foot level, and one, we manage our risk, especially in any one particular industry.
The other thing, Chair, is I don't know whether or not, I know Ted was going to do it, and did he send out the board level income statement and balance sheet? I don't know if that got sent or not. Okay, those were done through 12/31, and it seems like I should take that opportunity to say that as a net percentage, we're at 50% at 12/31 of our budget numbers. Just thought I'd throw that out there for you.
Perfect. So with that. 48% of, 96%
year end. I'll take it that you're happy with that we're right on target.
Mr. Chairman, I just observed that I'm really glad Michael and I decided to work with Ada.
That's good.
Training purpose, of course.
Thank you. Michael, do you have anything else on your comments?
No, sir, I don't.
All right. So, the next board meeting is Thursday, March 25th. There has been some discussion about having a data board meeting in Fairbanks. And one of the dates that we thought would be appropriate, and I'm going to just throw it out for comments, is June 25th. It's nice, usually nice weather up there.
It'll be a long day.
So I will request that you guys think about. There's some issue, you know, right now it's tentatively talked about, and I would consider that. And Corinne, would you, with Sherry, Ed, and Michael, start the process of doing that, unless I hear any major objections?
No, I just observed that one thing, if it is going to happen, get the plane reservations sooner than later. That's just chock-a-block in June. But the other thing is, if we could limit our agenda in the morning and get an early start, then in the afternoon, I mean, we'll see pipe being put in. Bob will put on a dog and pony show, but we could go out to where the tanks are for storage. We could see the pipes going in. I mean, there's lots of things to see if we got a van and went around for maybe 4 hours in the afternoon. So plan on a long day, but I think it would be really interesting to see the results of our efforts over the last couple of years. So I think
I would recommend that we plan on coming in the night before.
Yeah.
Because the world starts. We're not going to start at 10 o'clock. We'll start at 8 o'clock on that day. And we'll just try and free up the afternoon for an evening flight back.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you. So both hotel reservations and airline reservations at a premium as far as making sure we're in the queue. So that would be coming in the 24th afternoon, for everybody, and then rooms for everybody.
And we had a native meeting there a couple of years ago.
I've done that. I traveled a lot.
I don't remember. But the university carried a bunch of that organizational load, didn't they?
I might be able to help that.
Yeah, I mean, they helped us get a room and all that kind of stuff, so that might make it a little easier on you guys. So, yeah.
If things are appropriate to have an reception in groups the night before, their chamber, FDEC, mm-hmm. in those groups would be appropriate. All right. I think now we're down to change to item B and the business. So I'll entertain a motion to go on to the next session.
Yes, Chairman.
Go ahead.
I move the board enter into executive session to discuss confidential personnel matters related to the ADA executive director.
Second. Objections, we are going to executive session.